Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
Well, as many of you know, we have embarked upon a study of Paul's prayer for the Colossian church, which begins in verse 9 of Colossians chapter 1. And so far, we're still in verse 9, just the first verse where Paul introduces his prayer to the Colossian church. The record of his prayer goes on after that, and there's a great deal to be gleaned from this prayer, but we're just getting into it, setting the foundation and getting the first part of it and trying to get our minds around what it is that Paul is praying for and how different are Paul's prayer concerns and Paul's prayer focus than is so much of our focus today. How vitally important this is that we understand how Paul prayed so that we can understand better how we should pray. How important it is that we understand what were Paul's concerns for the Colossian Christians so that we can better understand what our concerns for others ought to be. And we so oftentimes have our priorities in the wrong place, even in praying. I can't imagine hardly anything that we can do in the Christian life that is more godly, more spiritual, more Christ-like than praying, but even our prayers are often weak and often, in fact, I would say always to some degree, tinted with sin because we're sinners. And we're not entirely free from sin yet, and won't be until we get to heaven. So even our prayers tend to be sinful. Not totally, but partly so. And that's why it's important to study the prayers of the Bible, so that we get a better idea of how we ought to pray in a God-honoring way. So that's what we're doing on this Friday, October 30. Thank you for joining us. And many thanks to those whose financial gifts keep us teaching God's Word on this station. All right, here's the opening of Paul's prayer in Colossians 1:9. He says, "For this reason we also, since the day we heard of it, that you have received the gospel, do not cease to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding." Paul said, "I pray for you." Great. Thank you, Paul. Paul said, "I pray for you that you may be filled with the knowledge of God's will." Well, Paul, that's fine, but I've got other concerns. Please pray for me to be healed. Please pray for me to get a better job. Please pray for me to get along better with my mother-in-law. Please pray for all kinds of things we want Paul to pray for. I've got this pain. I've got this need. And Paul doesn't mention any of those things, not any of those things, not any of those kinds of things in his prayer for the Colossians. And his first petition is that they will be filled with the knowledge of God's will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding. It is a God-centered focus in his prayer. Paul is praying that the Colossians will become more God-centered in their thinking, in their desires, in their aspirations, in their daily lives, to be filled up full with the knowledge of his will. One reason why it's so difficult for us to learn more about God, and that's what Paul is praying for here, that the Colossians will grow in their understanding of who God is and what He's like and what it is that He desires. And one of the reasons why it's difficult for us to grow in this area is because we know so much that isn't so about God. You say, what's that again? Because we think we know so much that isn't true. We know things that are really wrong. We think we know things that are actually not so. We have picked up a lot of misinformation about God, and a great deal of what we need to do is to jettison false ideas about God and replace them with true ideas about Him. And so we need to study God's Word with that in mind. And we need to listen to sound teachers who can help us with this. There are plenty of false teachers and poor teachers, as far as the content, as far as the truth of what they're teaching, out there to listen to. Some of them are very personable, some of them are very attractive, some of them are very excellent communicators, so they may be good teachers from that standpoint, but in regard to what they are teaching, they're not teaching very much that's true, right, and helpful. And it's hard to be filled with the knowledge of God's will when our minds are filled with things that are not true, that are mistaken notions about God. That's why we do need to make sure that we're under solid ministry. That's why we need to be in fellowship with a church where God's Word is seriously revered and communicated, for God's Word is faithfully taught. That's why we need to engage in family worship in our homes to teach our children the truth about God, and we need to make sure that we are using good material in family worship. That's why it's important that we use good hymns, both in our family worship at home and in our church. Why is that so important? We shouldn't choose our Christian hymns, the songs we sing, whatever you want to call them, on the basis of our subjective reaction to how they sound. That's the way most people tend to select their hymns. I like that because I like the music. I like the way it's put together. It's catchy. It moves me. And indeed, music is a powerful medium, and it's able to move us in many ways. But the most important thing about the hymns we sing is the content of the words. How true is it, number one, and how edifying is it, number two? Obviously, it can't be edifying if it's not true, but it can even be true and still be fairly shallow, not particularly edifying. A really good hymn is in many respects like a good sermon. On occasion, I have taken a hymn, a good solid hymn, and have used that as a basis for a sermon. Point one, stanza one. Point two, stanza two. Now, I don't do that often. When I have tended to do that has been at funerals where people are not accustomed to listening to the kinds of expository sermons that I bring to our congregation, and where generally you don't have time to deliver a really thorough, well-prepared expository message anyway. But to take an old familiar hymn that most people, if they have any kind of Christian background, are familiar with, and just break apart the stanzas and give a summary of what's said in each stanza, that, I think, can be very effective. And what I'm trying to say is, a good hymn is filled with biblical truth, sound doctrine. And that's what we need to be putting into our minds, because we are trying to be filled with the knowledge of His will. Back to Paul's prayer for the Colossian church. I cease not to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of His will. Well, how are we going to get filled up with the knowledge of His will? By pouring into our minds and hearts knowledge about Him. And if we are filling our minds with things that are trite, we're not going to get very far in growing in knowledge of who God really is. We need to be singing hymns that exalt the majesty of God, the holiness of God, the wisdom of God, the power of God, and the other attributes of God. We need to sing hymns that deal with different aspects of salvation and explain for us concepts like justification and redemption and propitiation and so forth and so on in hymns. You can break them down into hymns. Hymns that teach us about the person and work of Jesus Christ. And this is what we need to be pouring into our minds so that we can be filled to overflowing with the knowledge of His will. God has already revealed a great deal of His will. It is there to be acquired, but it is not going to be acquired effortlessly. By God's design, it's going to take work. We have to be willing to do the work. We're not going to absorb it just by being in the atmosphere where it is. It's not like osmosis. The Bible tells us that it is a king's majesty or honor to conceal a matter. And what that does, of course, is gives us the opportunity to demonstrate how much we value it. Jesus made it clear that he doesn't lay his treasures on the surface. He told his disciples not to cast their pearls before swine. It's not just out there for anybody to bump into. There are truths that are available to virtually anyone, but to get down into the richer understanding of God and of His will, you're going to have to dig for that like treasure to demonstrate that you do value it, that it is treasure to you, that it's worth the work. If you knew that you had gold buried in your backyard, you probably wouldn't say, well, yeah, I know it's out there and it's worth several million dollars, but it's too much work. I just don't want to bother with it. I don't think so. I think you'd be out there digging. Because, well, that's valuable. Is that more valuable than knowing the will of God? Paul didn't think so. And he prayed that the Colossians would be filled with the knowledge of His will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding. That's what I want. That's what I pray for myself. And that's what I pray for my church. That's what I pray for my family. And that's what you ought to be praying for yourself and for your family and for your church and for our community and for our nation. That's what we need more than anything else. We need a greater knowledge of God. It's the lack of that that is ruining us. And that's what we need. May God grant that to us. Until next week, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you His eternal peace.